Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Holy Roman Catholic Church, which has yet again shown itself to be decidedly unwoke about the significance of race and race symbolism. Obviously, we have a long-standing objection of the church for its refusal to allow women in leadership, for its opposition to reproductive rights, and for hostility toward every symbol of the holy acronym string, even the ones that nobody really knows what they mean. But if we had any hopes at all for improvement by the robe-wearing landlords of Vatican City, it was that they would finally nominate a pope of color. After all, among the 252 cardinals in the conclave, 29 are from Africa, and one is even African-American. With 30 black cardinals to choose from, we hoped, perhaps naively, that it could really happen. But to no avail, yet another white guy has taken his seat on the gold throne. So disappointing. As you may know, there have been 266 popes, only three of them have been black. That means only 1% of all popes have been African. But if you consider time served, the picture's even worse. Pope Victor I served 10 years from 189 to 199 AD. Pope Miltiades served for 3 years from 311 to 314. And Pope Gelasius I served 4 years from 492 to 496. This means that of the 1,992 years since St. Peter, the first pope, only 17 years, or less than 0.1% of the lifespan of the Catholic Church, has seen it led by a black pope. More proof that racism really is just a math problem. But it's worse than that. Consider some of the color choices associated with the papacy. His vestments are white, or at least off-white, perhaps ivory. The acolytes wear white. The candles are white. Jesus is referred to as the light of the world, whereas Lucifer is referred to as the prince of darkness, at least according to John Milton. And who gets to wear black in Catholicism? The nuns. The lowly nuns. And, well, yeah, the priests when they go out into the lost world as a representation of mourning and death. But at that point, what distinguishes them from Johnny Cash? A white collar. The only routinely black thing in the church is often a Bible. Black letters, right? Which as soon as you open it, is page upon page of white space dominating the very small black letters, and sometimes red ones, whatever that means. But of course, the most obvious racism in the church is in the conclave itself, which sends out its message of progress to the people with contrasting colors of smoke. Black smoke for failure and white smoke for sweet victory. White is for winning and black is for losing? It really doesn't get much more unwoke than that. This entire religious organization with its history of radical exclusion and its patently racist color palette must go. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Florida. The state that regularly runs afoul of everything we stand for. Why can't they just stop attacking us? Well, in the latest offense worthy of their cancellation, the legislature and the governor actually agreed about something. Something awful. Reversing decades of good public policy, scientific data, and children with reduced cavities, Florida is now banning the use of all additives in drinking water that do not specifically improve the quality of the water, and that includes banning fluoride. You would think that a state which has a name so similar to the very chemical under consideration would have made a different choice. Fluoride, fluorid, it's almost identical. Why the separation? You even have native entertainers such as Florida, who seem to recognize that being a Sunshine Stater makes much more sense if one is pro-fluoride. Duh. Literally, the word for turning someone into a resident is the same word for making water safer. Fluoridation. But no, the state has gone the other way. And of course, it saddens us because we believe reducing cavities, especially for poor children who don't have good oral care routines or access to dental services, is a good thing. But that's not the real issue. You see, as advocates of communitarian thinking and opponents of individualism, we agree with the cavity-loving Republicans. This is really an issue about medical socialism versus medical freedom. They say it's wrong to force people to drink medicine without their consent. We say it's irrelevant whether people consent to what's good for them. As Phil Bink's fourth treatise on the benevolence of government reminds us, government exists to do to people what they won't do to themselves for their own good. Sometimes called paternalism, this core idea of government as the kind, wise, and loving parent who takes care of its citizen children even against their will or when they're being bratty, is of course the only rational thing to believe, as we do. And it's easy to understand because the needs of the community and the wisdom of the community always outweigh the judgment of the individual. People don't have the right to harm themselves, and they certainly don't have the right to harm children, which is exactly what making Florida into Floridna means woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to take a moment to celebrate a major milestone in American religious history as the Presbyterian Church USA recently made the decision to close down its missions program after more than 200 years. Yes, the Presbyterian Church was the first Protestant denomination in the United States to formally establish a national mission program, the Standing Committee of Missions, in 1802. And after 223 years of sending tens of thousands of devoted Christians around the world to preach the gospel and serve those in need, PCUSA recently gutted its missions division, blaming the cutbacks on declining membership and faltering finances. Obviously, the entire project of Christian evangelism stands at odds with our core beliefs. Christians believe in fixed and immutable truths, whereas we believe in the viewpoint of the individual or the group. Christians believe in salvation by faith in Jesus Christ, whereas we believe in salvation by pretending to be a more and more virtuous person all the time. Christians believe the Bible is the Word of God, whereas we believe men wrote the Bible and it's done nothing but get in the way of healthy societies ever since. And of course, historically, Christians have been so devoted to these core ideas that they've traveled around the world to persuade others to believe them, building hospitals, teaching children to read, and providing for the poor, afflicted, and imprisoned along the way. But no more, and it's a good thing too, you see? The very idea of evangelism is culturally arrogant, starting from the premise that we know something that the target group doesn't know. But who are we to tell other people how to live, except that everything we stand for is about telling people how to live, including telling them not to tell other people how to live. We strongly oppose the narrow-mindedness of lecturing other people on what they should do, which is why we constantly lecture people not to lecture people on what they should do. You see, it's not narrow-minded when we tell other people how to live. It's open-minded because it's open-minded to be narrow-minded when telling narrow-minded people that they should stop telling other people to be narrow-minded. Understand? The point here is that even though we agree with the Presbyterians about nearly everything these days, from social justice to racial reconciliation to climate alarmism to sexual anarchy and to honoring all of our LGBTQ2+ square root of six friends in being whatever they decide they are, we nevertheless celebrate the closing down of any Christian missions program, especially one as long-standing as that of the PCUSA. So well done, quitters! Besides, it's not as though the Bible gives you some great commission to spread the good news or anything silly like that. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.